Session number 26579.
Mr. Clark, Reel 9. Now, we were talking about when you arrived at Trieste. Now, you said you were promoted back to corporal, but you want to correct that now, don't you?
Certainly. My memory played tricks with me there. I wasn't made corporal until further on in my career. So, during my sojourn in Trieste, I was a rifleman. Now, I think it's only...
Hang on, just before you go, and the other thing about it, you wanted to say about when you were at Gibraltar, you got leave and a course back in England when you were made corporal the first time. Can I just talk about that, because that's quite relevant.
That is quite correct. What happened was when we arrived in Trieste, Gibraltar, there was no home leave. We weren't allowed to get home on leave. So the colonel thought up quite an ingenious plan. He held these NCOs cadres to encourage NCOs themselves to go and have get a good result, and B, riflemen to go in there and get a good result with a view to pretty rapid promotion. In my case, this actually happened. I rose to the rank of corporal very, very quickly. Then I was very fortunate. I was put on the list of NCOs who were deemed fit to be sent home to the UK on courses. And I was sent home to the School of Infantry, Warminster, where we had just left, on a method of instruction course, which only lasted 7 days. But as I say, the object of the exercise was just to make sure that I could get a bit of leave. It was a reward for working hard, A, on the cadre, and B, as an NCO. And as a consequence of this, I did a very good course, thoroughly enjoyed it at Warminster, and then...
Well, that takes us to where we are.
Got about 3 weeks leave, at home leave, and then returned back to Gibraltar.
Now, the next thing, you want to say what the British were doing at Trieste. Now, I think that's very interesting.
Yeah.
As you understood it then. Yeah. You know.
Before we left Gibraltar, we were briefed up on the fact that we were actually going to be there as a security force for interior security. Simply because that all the British troops had left Italy by this time, but only the British and American troops that were left in Trieste, simply because that there was a lot of ill feeling between Italy and Yugoslavia regarding who owned the territory. It was known as the Free Territory of Trieste, and our force was called BETFOR.
Called what?
BETFOR. British Element Trieste Forces. Now, our job was purely and simply to be on standby, that in the event of any trouble, we and Americans could be rushed to wherever there was any trouble arose. Also in this force was about 2,000 or 3,000 what was known as Venezia Giulia police. These were Italians who had been trained by British police officers. They had a barracks about 3 miles away from us, and they were a very, very efficient force. Very highly trained, very fit men for policemen. They were very fit. They virtually had military status at that particular time. So, in effect, what we did was we were responsible for mounting patrols up in what they called the Morgan Line. Now, the Morgan Line was called after a general, General Morgan, who was part of the negotiating team who set up BETFOR, and he drew a line in the map, in other words a frontier line, with certain landmarks that would indicate where the frontier was. However, on many occasions the Yugoslavs would cheat and move the line, and when we discovered this, when our intelligence boys discovered this, then we would move the line back to where it should be. So it became a bit of fun and games, really, in this respect.
Now, what were the patrols like? What would it be like when you went out along?
They were virtually just vehicles, jeeps mainly. We just patrolled up and down. There was roads quite near the frontier. We'd patrol up there, maybe 3 or 4 of us, command of a corporal, and we'd get to a certain point, we'd go out, dismount, and then just check the Morgan line, see that everything was okay. The Morgan line was where it should be. Training wasn't all that we didn't train all that much, simply because, once again, like Gibraltar, the area was very restricted. There was a training area called Bazovica, about west of Trieste, the city itself, where each company went up to train. Now, bearing in mind that there was two British battalions there, there was a three British battalions. There was the Cameronians, the King's Own, who shared the same barracks with us, Rossetti Barracks, and the South Lancashire Regiment, who were stationed about another 10 miles away. So, therefore, the training ground was very, very limited. And as far as I can remember, my company only went up there once to do a week's training. And that was all that could be spared.
What was the training like?
It was just very, very basic tactical training. Very basic section attacks and things like that. Plus a bit of interior security training. Now, towards interior security, every company would have a spell, a week standby, where no one was allowed out. And every evening, after an evening meal, at roughly about 6 o'clock, the whole company paraded in the company lines, fully equipped, where they'd been inspected by the company commander. Now, this was a pretty rapid force exercise. If in the event of the balloon going up, then each battalion had a company that would immediately send straight to the trouble spot and deal with it until the rest of the battalion could be deployed. So every company had this week's exercise where the concentrated mainly on making sure their kit and your weapons and everything were in good order, ready for a rapid deployment. Now,
did you practice what you'd do if you were deployed? I mean, did you practice your internal security duties? You know, I mean.
Well, we couldn't really, once again, for the lack of space. Because bearing in mind that Rossetti Barracks was occupied by the 1st Cameronians and the 1st King's Own, it was a massive big barracks with four huge barrack blocks. And the King's Own had two of these blocks, and we had the two other two blocks. We shared the same barrack square, shared the same nappy. Now, this was initially seemed to cause a bit of worry, especially with the adjutants, thinking maybe there'd be a lot of trouble. Fortunately, the Cameronians in the King's Own, we got on exceptionally well. There was never any trouble, either in the canteen. And the regimental police of the King's Own and the Cameronians, they shared the one guard room. And there was tremendous spirit. So, as I say, everything was geared to lack of space. There was another place further up the coast a bit, a place called Duino. Now, we went up there for 2 weeks at a time, and this was to do combined operations training. Now, I say combined operations, that's what it was titled, but really it was just a couple of weeks up there, I think, to get us out of the city and teach enemy in the battalion who couldn't swim to swim. We did paddle around in boats, do a couple of little mock landings, but it was very, very very small beer indeed.
And that was Duino?
Yeah, D-U-I-N-O, Duino. And just quite near Duino, there was a big castle there, and the castle was the home of the general commanding the British Element Trieste forces, whose name escapes me for the moment. But there was one lovely thing about this Duino. We were under canvas there, and just back from the seafront was this, a big wall, a big sort of dock thing, a concrete dock affair. And the sea was pretty deep there, but in actual fact, it was fantastic. We could run down there from the camp and leap straight off this big harbour thing into the water, and the water was absolutely warm, absolutely beautiful. and we used to revel in it. And then they started a course then of teaching as many people in the company to swim. We went up there, company at a time, and we were taught to swim. I was all right. Lots of us already knew how to swim, but it was a good instructional time for non-swimmers. Then the next training area we had from there was up in Austria, a place called Schmelz. Now, this training area was about 10,000 feet above sea level. We would leave Trieste in coaches and travel up to a place called Villach in Austria, spend the night there in Villach at a transit camp, and then the next morning, the whole company, we went up their company at a time, naturally, went up to this, and we got on this train, and the train would take us up so many thousand feet up the mountainside, and then to what they call the railhead, and it could go no further. We then had to get out and march up to the summit of the mountains. This camp, once again, we were under canvas. And also the Americans, we shared the camp with the Americans. And it was basically, the training was field firing, was basically the object of the exercise. There wasn't any tactical things about it, it was just purely to so we could get the hang of using our weapons, firing live again. Now, the great thing about this training area was that there was no food rationing, because it was so high up, the air was so fine that you were continually hungry. And as I said, there was no food rationing. If we went out onto the ranges, we filled our small pack with sandwiches and filled our water bottles. We'd get to the ranges where we're to do the firing, and the first thing we'd have to do is, and the colour sergeant would follow up with tea and coffee and water. And before we'd start any exercise for the morning, we would eat the sandwiches and drink as much fluid as we could. Now, the field firing wouldn't last all that long, simply because of this business of being continually hungry. So you'd find that the field firing would finish about 3 o'clock. The colour sergeant would bring up the lunch about 1. As I said, there was no rationing. You could eat whatever you could. And then we'd march back to camp, which is about 4 or 5 miles. Now, in the dining room, it was a concrete dining room, proper building, the dining room and kitchen. And in the dining room, there were massive big wooden crates, all lined with paper and what have you, greaseproof paper, and always full of sandwiches. You could go in there any time of the day or night and eat and drink. There was always coffee and tea on the go. So this was quite a new thing for us, to find that we could eat whenever we could. But, as I say, the thinness of the air and Mother Nature being what it was, we were perpetually hungry.
And this camp was called?
It was called the Schmelz.
Do you know how to spell it? Or
S-C-H-M-E-L-T-Z. That's the top of my mind. It might be wrong.
I'll do it, near enough.
My German has deteriorated over the years.
And there was no element of mountain training, it was just a firing
camp?
No,
it was just mainly firing. Firing all the different platoon weapons.
Had any of the weapons changed? I mean, or was it still...
No, the weapons are still the same. The same with being in Gibraltar for 2 years, Trieste for 6 months by then, we never had any chance of firing the weapons to the full extent that they should have been fired. When the training was finished, we then came back to Villach, to the transit camp. We marched to the railhead, and the trains took us back to Villach. Now, apparently over the years, what used to happen was this, that when a company disentrained, the company commander would set his watch, and the company would set off to march up to this training camp, and he would time it, and when he'd got the timing done, he would report back to the battalion headquarters the time of the company. And it was a bit of a competition. And there was a very funny episode happened over this. We apparently broke the record, our company broke the record for going up there. And when we got back to Valak, we were allowed out for the night into the town of Valak, but well warned as to our behaviour. Anyway, when we got into the town, I suppose we were probably a winning rugby team or a winning cricket team. We were really up for it. And as a consequence, lots of us went into the local bars and got slaughtered. As a result, 10 of us landed in the jail, the civic jail. Not through any violent conduct, really, but I think the local police feared that this, we might develop into a violent group. Nothing was further from the truth. However, during this period, apparently, the Sergeant Major was our little company Sergeant Major Galbraith, the wee Führer. He was standing up in the sergeant's mess boasting, "My company, fastest company up and the fastest company down," like, you know. And then somebody, the duty NCO, whispered in his ear that 10 of the company had landed in the civic jail. Needless to say, the Sergeant Major was a bit deflated. However, we were released after about an hour or so without charge. Transport came along from the camp, piled us into transport, and we were all in high spirits, really. There was no sort of ill feeling or anything. We were all just in high spirits. And the next morning, we're lined up and we're given an absolute roasting by the company commander. And then that was it, forgotten. We then made our way back to Trieste to carry out the duties in Trieste. So, really, there's not a great deal to say, except that the Trieste, the pub life and the cafeterias were much better than what we'd experienced in Gibraltar or back home. Now, for example, in the middle of the town, there was a lovely big main street, which was called the Via Carducci. Now, this was a big, broad street. And all along either side it were restaurants and bars, and mainly used by the Americans. The Americans used this area very, very much so. But we consigned ourselves mainly to a little street called the Via Venti Settembri. Now this was a lovely little street, narrow. We used to call it the Monkey Run, actually. They nicknamed it the Monkey Run. There were lots of lovely little pubs, and the thing that we'd seen here that we'd never seen before was tables outside, wining and dining outside in the streets. And this was a really novelty thing for us, and we thoroughly enjoyed it. The great thing about Trieste was, at first there was a bit of drunkenness at first, but then it tapered off, simply because the soldiers knew that they could get a drink up until late hour. And the other thing was that we could eat plenty while we're having a drink, and this helped a great deal. So in actual fact, the drunkenness rate fell rapidly, like, and that's about the extent of our tour in Trieste.
How did you get on with the Italians and the Yugoslavs, if you met many Yugoslavs?
No problem. We never had any problem. In fact, I remember going to one little pub where I used to get in quite regular, and I made a lot of Italian friends in there, about six Italian friends. They were married couples. I wish them. Another good thing about the thing was that a lot of these pubs, they had lovely accordions behind the bar, and if you were a good accordion player, you just said to the boss, "Let's have the accordion." And this guaranteed the accordion player, if he knew his stuff, guaranteed him free drink all night. He didn't need to pay for his booze. And we had one guy there especially, a chap who he was third accordionist to the great Jimmy Shan, Scottish accordion band. And this bloke, he used to get into a couple of pubs and he could play all night and never pay for a drink. And he, the Italians absolutely thought the world of him. He was a marvellous accordion player. Unfortunately, he finished up being sent to jail for 7 years for rape. He raped up in the training areas that happened in the Bazovica. He raped a young country girl, a farm worker, and he was caught and went away for 7 years. And we never saw him again, like, you know. Not that we did want to see him after that lot. You know? Now, in closing about Trieste, I must say that I didn't go to Bazovica. I've been playing in a hockey match not long before the company was due to go there, and I got a whack with a hockey stick in the nether regions, and this caused me to have a hernia. And just about a week before the company went to Bazovica, I was taken into hospital for an operation on hernia. Now, in those days, a hernia was quite a big operation. It lasted a long time, not like today, where it's you're in and out of hospital in a day. And I had the operation, and I spent about 10 days in hospital, and then another 3 to 4 weeks as an outpatient for the physiotherapist. And that is about the last memories I have of Trieste.
So what was your next move? Well, when did you leave Trieste?
We left there exactly a year later, the following December. I can't remember the name of the ship we went on board, but we were embarked ready for Hong Kong, to get to Hong Kong. And the great thing was that apparently there had been a great spirit between the American senior NCOs and our NCOs. And one of the American senior NCOs apparently was the bandmaster of one of the local American battalions. And as our ship pulled out of Trieste, they were on a big launch, the band, and they were playing Slow Boat to China. We thoroughly enjoyed this, like, you know. So that was my last memory of sailing out of Trieste, the Americans sailing around the ship and bidding us farewell and playing this tune.
Now, what was the trip like?
It was a very good trip, actually.
What were conditions like on board? I know you don't remember a name, but...
Conditions were all the troop ships then were the same. It was a hammock. It was still the same old system where you slept on the deck, ate on the deck, and did everything. And it was just basically no different from any other trips you had. But it was lovely. What I enjoyed was sailing down the Mediterranean along the North African coast. It was really, especially at night time, beautiful big full moon there. Absolutely fantastic, and seeing the sand dunes, because the ships did sail pretty close to the coast. So once again, it was an eye opener for us. It was something new to us. We then had to go through the Suez Canal zone. Now this was quite an eye opener. We stopped off in Suez for 24 hours and were allowed to go ashore for about 4 hours, which we did, no trouble, once again, no trouble. But it was my first encounter with Egyptians. And believe you me, they are the finest pickpockets on this earth. The guys were coming back on board the ship saying, my God, my wallet's gone, my paybook's gone, everything. Because the jippers, as we called them, were run amok. Because they knew that we were all pretty green soldiers, pretty green, and not very streetwise, as they were. So consequently, we suffered. We then sailed on, and our next port of call was Singapore. We had a guard of honour prepared at Singapore to meet up with the 2nd 6th Gurkhas, or 2nd 10th Gurkhas. They were the brigade that we were eventually going to go into. So what happened was, there was a dockside ceremony where the Gurkhas presented our colonel with a special kukris, and we gave them a presentation. I can't remember what we presented to them, but it was quite an impressive ceremony. Two guards of honour lined up. Then we were allowed ashore for several hours, once again, best behaviour, no problems, a good look around Singapore, back on the ship and into Hong Kong.
Now, what were your first impressions of Hong Kong?
Well, my first impressions of Hong Kong really was, once again, I was on the baggage party, and it was night time when we arrived there, when we docked. It was night time. So all I saw was just blazing lights of a very small Hong Kong then. It's since expanded. But when we got the baggage sorted out, we were sent straight up country, up to the battalion headquarters was in a little village, or just outside a little village called Fan Ling.
Now, how do you spell that? Is it two words?
Fan Ling, two words, Fanling, Fan Ling. Now, the Fan Ling was the virtual railhead for all military traffic, because beyond that, we were getting very, 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 very near the Chinese border, Chinese frontier. So the companies were then split up. A company went to a camp called Commando Hill, which is about 3 or 4 miles away from Battalion HQ. My company, C Company, and D Company, we went up to a place called it was a monastery, an old Chinese monastery. And we, C Company, we were based actually in the building. It was called Sacred Hill Camp, in actual fact, Sacred Hill Camp. We were in the building, C Company. D Company were under canvas in the same grounds. Quite a bit of separation between us. Now, I think we had the best the deal, because the monastery was pretty good nick. A lot was an old building. We were we had double tiered beds in each room, and we were 8 men to a room, maybe less, depended. We then had a little canteen. It was a little sort of quadrangle in this building, and just at one end where there was lovely palm trees. It was quite picturesque, actually. And at the end of the other side from the rooms was a lovely canteen, company canteen, which we shared with D Company. The surroundings were very, very pleasant. When you come out to the back entrance or the side entrance, it was a bit of a roadway, gravel roadway, red gravel roadway. And we could look out, and it was quite a panoramic view of the countryside. And on the one hillside, we saw these little funny things sticking out of the ground, but we didn't realise until much later that they were actually Chinese graves. The Chinese were buried standing on their feet. And we discovered later on we could go up and take the lids off these graves and see the skeletons. The only thing you had to be wary about was that lots of snakes occupied these graves. So you might lift a lid and find a bandit crate coming out to go for you, like, you know. So, but it was, once again, it was another thing that we learned about another culture.